When you think of the National Park Service, the south side of Chicago may not be the first thing to come to mind. Welcome to the Pullman District, a sprawling urban setting that's history has touched many aspects of contemporary American culture. Just ask a former president who used to work in this neighborhood.
This is the neighborhood where I made lifelong friends. This is the area where I became a man. I learned so much about love and work and loyalty. But what makes Pullman special is the role it's played in our history. This place has been a milestone in our journey toward a more perfect union.
To understand the importance of the Pullman District, you have to go back to the early 1880s when a New York carpenter named George Pullman decided to start manufacturing his luxury Pullman train cars in Chicago, the railroad hub of the country. But with big ambitions and big orders to fill, he needed a big workforce. Mike Szymanski is the president of the historic Pullman Foundation.
That's when he decided to build a new plant, but also provide a experimental community.
That community includes hundreds of homes, a hotel, churches, parks, schools, and of course all centered around the massive factory buildings.
George Pullman wasn't just the namesake of the place where his workers lived. He was also their boss and their landlord and their mayor and their superintendent and their sheriff.
Kathy Schneider is the superintendent of the Pullman National Monument. She tells me most of this community was built in the span of just 2 years.
There's different levels of homes in the community, just as you'd see in any community. The larger homes for the executives were closer to the factory. The further away from the factory you got, the further you had to walk to work in the morning, the smaller the houses got.
More than 130 years later, many of those red brick homes are still here, lined perfectly down the tree-lined streets.
To your right, you'll see Market Square.
Okay.
That was actually the fresh produce meat market. There was a hall upstairs.
The community thrived for about a decade.
The recession occurred in 1893. The demand for freight cars declined to by 90%. And then the demand for passenger cars also declined.
Pullman slashed his workers' pay. Some saw their wages fall dramatically. Pullman didn't take a pay cut himself, and he didn't lower the rents in his company town. So his workers organized for better pay and better working and living conditions. A strike started here in Pullman, and it spread across the country. Federal troops were called to restore order, and in the end, more than 30 workers were killed.
But it was that dramatic and deadly strike that set the course for the labor movement for centuries to come.
Days after the strike ended, an act of Congress established Labor Day, a day to honor working men and women of America. And gradually, our country would add protections that we now take for granted. A 40-hour work week, the weekend, overtime pay, safe workplace conditions, and the right to organize for higher wages and better opportunities.
But the Pullman District did more than just usher in the labor movement. About 40 years later, Pullman again was at the center of bringing rights to people who didn't have them before.
The development of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters and their role in the civil rights movement and their influence on developing the African-American middle class.
The white workers who built Pullman's rail cars won new rights. But those rights were not extended to the black porters who worked on these cars, the former slaves and sons and grandsons who made beds and carried luggage and folded sheets and shined shoes. And they worked as many as 20 hours a day on less than 3 hours sleep just for a couple dollars a day.
In the 1920s, they were organized, and then in the 1930s, they were finally recognized as a union by the AFL, and then also got a contract with the Pullman Company. The important part of that story is that under the leadership of A. Philip Randolph, who was the president, they emerged to have a major role in the civil rights history of the country.
It was those Pullman porters who gave the base by which A. Philip Randolph could convinced President Truman to desegregate the armed forces. One of those porters' great-granddaughter had the chance to go to a great college and a great law school and had the chance to work for the mayor and had the chance to climb the ladder of success and serve as a leader in some of our city's most important institutions.
That granddaughter, his wife, former First Lady Michelle Obama. In the decades that followed, the city of Chicago has grown. Industries have changed, people have moved out, and people have moved into the Pullman District. Many of the old buildings have burned or crumbled, but the community remains. Szymanski still lives in one of those quaint brick buildings in the Pullman District.
In 67, when I was working on a master's in city and regional planning at IIT and finishing up my professional degree in architecture. So this was, you know, absolutely fascinating to me because it reflected many of the planning principles that are still used today.
Many private organizations have been preserving this land since Pullman founded this community. The state of Illinois is also aided, but in 2015, the signature by then-President Obama set aside 200 of the thousands of acres of the Pullman District as a national monument, opening the opportunity for this district to be shared nationwide.
It is right that we think of our national monuments as these amazing vistas and mountains and rivers. But part of what we're preserving here is also history. It's also understanding that places that look ordinary are nothing but extraordinary.
The City of Chicago and the National Park Conservation Association did an economic analysis before the park was proclaimed. And they this analysis suggested that within 10 years, we could have upwards of 300,000 visitors a year here in Pullman.
Do you know where you're at right now?
We're 25,000, maybe.
There's still a ways to go, though. Behind a chain-link fence stands the clock tower the National Park Service is frantically working to restore.
There's still rails here.
We have wildlife.
Snake.
4 years after President Obama declared it a national monument, the administration building is still a hollowed-out shell. Crews have been working to secure the building before renovating the inside.
Wow.
So it's rough. After the fire, the state rebuilt it, and they were mostly just concerned with the exterior appearance. At that time, there were no plans for use of the building, so you can see the new steel deck in it. The new steel columns from when it was rebuilt. But it's, I like to call it a fixer-upper.
Yeah.
There's a tree growing out of the dirt floor.
You will be standing in the exhibit hall right now.
Wow.
Looking at there'll be a ranger desk there where they'll be able to take care of people both on the inside of the exhibit hall and the outside on the carriageway.
Workers are hoping to get it restored or at least the administration building portion of it completed by Labor Day 2020 so they can share the stories of this hallowed ground with the rest of the country and the rest of the world.
Development of rail travel in the United States and the role that the Pullman Company played. The experiment of the town, the early development of organized labor in the United States, and then the development of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters and their role in the civil rights movement.
That's the story of this place. That together we can do great things that we cannot accomplish alone.
Ryan Burrow, ABC News, Chicago.